are you and who am I in the light of who God is? But actually, I want to take us perhaps one step further, even further today, and ask the question, who are you, the people this is written for? Who are the people? Who are you, Judah? So I want to give you just a little bit of context, and I ask you to forgive me if you know this stuff already, and if Joff's already gone over it. I haven't, if I'm honest, listened to all of the sermons. I know. I did listen to the... No, don't get up and leave. I'm sorry. I haven't listened to them all, so I don't know quite what's gone before, so forgive me. But the context is kind of this, all right? So it might seem I'm going really far back, but don't worry, I'll do it quickly. So you've got 12 tribes in Israel, haven't you? Descended from the 12 sons of Jacob, okay? And they live in this land that God has given them, Israel. And it's kind of like a long line down like that. You have the 10 tribes at kind of the top here, a little mountain range, and then two tribes at the bottom, Judah and Benjamin. At this point in what we're looking at, the 10 tribes, they're kind of gone. We don't have to worry about them. They've been scattered across the world. We've got Judah, who we are going to mainly be looking at down at the bottom here. And at this time, Judah is being ruled by a bunch of pretty terrible kings, all right? There's a few good ones scattered in there, but mostly they're pretty awful, and they're leading the people astray and causing them, or allowing them at the very least, to worship other gods. Now, again, I'm going to go slightly further back here. God and Israel have a covenant, an agreement. And it really, really boils down to this. God says, I will give you land and I will be your God, and all you have to do is let me. That's the agreement. That's the covenant boiled down to the very, very bones of it. And as we see, Israel and Judah in this particular case are completely breaking their end of the bargain. They're completely ignoring it. They've broken the covenant. And so God is almost on a bound to stop having this covenant with them, to stop doing his side of the bargain. And because he's God, he refuses to not be their God. So he does the other. He takes the land that was part of the agreement away from them. And this is what Isaiah has seen. He has seen that in the future, what is going to happen is Judah is going to be taken from where they are in the south of Israel, and they're going to be taken in chains to Babylon. And it's called the exile. They're exiled from the land into a foreign country in chains. This is what Isaiah has seen. And as he writes this, it hasn't happened yet. In fact, in the verse before, in the chapter before, 39, some envoys from Babylon come along, and Hezekiah, the king, shows them around. And then Isaiah, at the end of it, says, everything you've showed them is going to be theirs. He's seen what is going to come, but the people, when he's writing it, haven't. But what is amazing is that this chapter, I imagine, at the time, they probably largely ignored it. However, when they're in exile, this chapter would have been incredibly important to them. And we'll kind of see why. So given that context, we can answer the question, who are you, when we apply it to Judah. So given that God is the comforting shepherd, Judah are the wayward sheep. That's who they are. They're the wayward sheep. In the same way a sheep would wander off and get itself trapped in some brambles or a fence or a hole or something, so Judah has wandered away from their shepherd, wandered away from their God, and they have got themselves into all sorts of trouble with the other nations and with, well, all sorts of trouble. And I love this metaphor of, right, shepherd and sheep, because yes, it says a lot about God, but it says so much about Judah as well. Because if you think about it, when a sheep wanders off and gets his stuff stuck in brambles or a hole or a fence or something, it's not like those things have attacked the sheep, is it? It's not like brambles have come along and viciously attacked a sheep, or a hole has chased a sheep around a field. The sheep has walked into this problem. It's walked willingly into this problem. And the same thing is true of Judah. They have walked into this. By walking away from God, they have walked into the trouble they find themselves in. And now you might think, what has this got to do with us? Or you might have already worked out where I'm going. Because the answer to the question, who are you, Judah, is the same as the answer to the question, who are you and I this morning? We are the wayward sheep. Even those of us that may have found Jesus, found the comforting shepherd, found the good shepherd, and experienced his forgiveness, all of us at some times play the part of the wayward sheep. We wander away. And when we do so, we wander in to sin. Even, you know, maybe this is dodgy theological ground, but I'm not entirely sure sin pursues us as much as we walk right smack bang into it. And we get ourselves all tied up in it. You know, and we are not being taken off into exile in a foreign country with chains and all that sort of thing. But it doesn't mean that the chains that we walk into ourselves, the chains of sin, aren't any more soul-destroying, any more difficult, any more life-robbing than the chains that Judah faced in exile. We do get ourselves into situations where sin is just all that we have, where there is absolutely nothing we can do to get ourselves out of the mess we've got ourselves into. And the same is true of Judah at this point. They have got themselves into a situation and there is literally no way they can get themselves out of it. And it's into this context. It's into this context that the comforting shepherd speaks. Comfort. Comfort, my people. I imagine exile is a time where they begin to hear and recognize the voice of their shepherd once again. And while I don't think it's good for us to get ourselves into situations where we just feel completely blocked and struggle with sin, it is a time where we can hear and recognize and begin to hear again the voice of our shepherd. And he says, comfort, comfort my people. And this is true comfort that God is giving to them here. True comfort, not like, you know, false comfort, I would say, is like if somebody came up to me and said, oh, you know, this is going on, like very small, just sort of like, oh, I'm worried about this. And I'd be like, don't worry, it'll be fine. That's just kind of false comfort. That's just kind of like, I don't know if it's going to be fine. For all I know, it's going to get a lot worse. But you don't say that, do you? You say, it'll be fine. But that's false comfort. What God is offering here is true comfort. And as Geoff pointed out to me this week, it goes all the way through Isaiah. He does this all the time. Because you go through, and true comfort is recognizing the terrible situation that you're in and still being able to say with certainty, it will be okay. And this is what God does all the way through Isaiah. He says, look at the state of you. Look at what you've done. I see the depth of your sin. I see the terrible situation you're in. I see how hurt and upset you are. And I'm telling you, it will be okay. This is true comfort that he gives to his people. And this verse, these verses at the beginning, we're going to go through just quickly right now. He begins by commanding the prophet. He's commanding the prophet Isaiah. He says, comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Now, in saying, this is what I love about the Bible. It's just so rich, one of the things. In doing this, God is actually comforting his people. He's commanding the Isaiah, the prophet, to comfort his people. But he himself is comforting his people. Because imagine this. Imagine for a moment that you are those people in exile. There they are, stuck. There they are, at the mercy of another nation. There they are, thinking, we broke the covenant. We broke the covenant, and God has taken the land from us. And God is well within his rights to say, I am done with you. Forget it. You broke it. That's it. And then what does he say in the first four words of this? The first four words, he says, comfort and comfort. Yeah, those are great, but it's the next word. My. My people. Even in the midst of all you have done, he says, you are mine. I see all you've done. I see the mess. I see what you have got yourselves into. But you are still mine. And the word is there for us as well today. You know, and this is what just blows my mind, that in the midst of the worst thing you have ever done, the worst thing you're ever going to do, the most heinous act, in the very moment of you doing it, God looks down, sees you and says, but you are still mine. When I was preparing this, I was like, oh, not again. Come on. God, why do you always give me the same thing to say? Always the same flipping thing. And I was like, you know, I remember being told as a young person, if a preacher says the same thing over and over again, it's because they're not paying attention. It's because they're not listening properly. It's because they're not doing their studying. And now I realize that's rubbish. I'm doing the studying. The problem is it all says the same flipping thing. It's grace all the way through, every page. It's, yes, you messed up, but that doesn't stop you being mine. This Either words are the words of the comforting shepherd. He says to his people, you are my people. You are mine. He carries on. He says to Isaiah, speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. Now, somebody once described the Old Testament to me as a Where's Wally for Jesus. You know, you go through, and if you know what you're looking for, he's right there kind of waving at you. And here we have one of those moments where this is fulfilled in the time of exile, but actually it's more fulfilled later on. It's even greater fulfilled by Jesus later on. What he's saying is simply this. The comfort he gives is, you are still my people, and it's your sin is paid for. This is the comfort he brings to the remnant in exile and to us. Now, he's not saying that Israel, that Judah, have managed to somehow pay for their own sins with 70 to 80 years in exile. Because how is that possible? How could they possibly have paid for their own sins? That's not what it's saying. But what he's saying is, I will overlook your sin because your sin will be paid for. Your sin has been paid for. This is the comfort the shepherd says to the people in exile. Their time in exile is going to be an end. Their sin has been paid for. Now, when it says that it's double, that God has heaped punishment on them double for their sins, actually, it's not literal, I don't think. The more I looked at it, the more I couldn't understand how that could be possible, how God could double their sin and somehow it would pay for them. It's not what it's saying. What it is saying is we're getting an insight into God's heart here. We're getting into insight into the heart of the comforting shepherd who looks at his people suffering in exile and says, it has gone on too long. It's gone twice as long as I wanted it to go on because I didn't want it to happen in the first place. I never wanted you to suffer in your sin. I never wanted you to suffer for your sin. And this is the message that he gives not only to us today, but to the whole world. Your suffering in your sin has lasted long enough, too long for me. I cannot take it anymore. Come back. Your sin is paid for. This is the message for them, which must have been amazing, but it's the message for us. It's gone on too long. Today, if you are like me so often and coming here feeling like a wayward sheep, feeling like, oh, I've messed up again and this has got to be it. This has got to be the last time that God says it's okay. He's sitting here today and he's saying, you are still mine and your sin is paid for. Your sin is paid for. It's done. In other words, it is finished. These are the words of comfort from the shepherd. And I can't think of any words more comforting, more life-giving, more peace-inducing, more freedom-giving. Your sin is paid for. Notice what he doesn't say, though. It doesn't say you are forgiven. It doesn't say you are forgiven because it's missing a vital step. Your sin is paid for. This is a message not just to the exiles, not just to us. This is a message for the whole world. Your sin is paid for, but you've got to accept it. You've got to forgive yourself. You've got to ask for forgiveness, and then you are forgiven. Your sin is paid for. It is done, but you've got to ask for it. Even if it's the 100th time you've asked, ask for it. The comforting shepherd speaks and he says, you're my people, your sin is paid for. And then we get this wonderful set of verses. A voice of one calling in the desert. In the desert, prepare the way for the Lord. Make straight in the wilderness a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level and the rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all mankind together will see it, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. again, just how wonderful. This is once again fulfilled in the time of exile, but it's fulfilled even more. It's more fully fulfilled. I don't know if you can use those two words together, but it is more fully fulfilled when it comes to Jesus. And the voice is just so brilliant, the Bible, right? We were looking at Impulse Light the other day, and the way that somebody said, it's like God is the architect of the Bible, and the guys that wrote it were just builders. You know, and I love it because the writer would never have known to just call it a voice, never known to keep the voice of the prophet mysterious. But in doing so, it applies, yes, to the prophet in this instance, but it also applies to John the Baptist in the future. And what's wonderful is hear this voice, which possibly is Isaiah's voice for the exiles. It's basically saying, take heart, your God is coming to rescue you. Your shepherd is coming to get you. He's going to rescue you. And that must have been a wonderful thing to hear in the middle of exile. But how wonderful, how brilliant that John the Baptist's voice is also this voice. And he says exactly the same thing. Take heart, your God is coming to rescue you. Your shepherd is coming to gather you in. He's coming to rescue you. For the exiles, it was Yahweh. He brought them out through Nehemiah, through many things. He brought them out of exile and back to their land. For us, Jesus. When we come to Christmas, this verse is so amazing because it's basically saying, we're coming up to Christmas, it's coming up to Advent, and do you know what? Your God is coming for you. It's awesome. Your God is coming for you. And there's this wonderful element of unstoppableness. Again, I don't know if that's a word. But there is this unstoppableness. There's no mountain. There's no valley. There's no rough ground that will stop the shepherd getting to his sheep. There's nothing that will stand in the way of the shepherd gathering in his flock. But there's actually more to that. There's an element of command for us. In the desert, prepare the way for the Lord. Jesus came as a little baby, and Jesus is coming again. And that command stands for us. Prepare the way, because he's coming. Prepare the way, because he's coming back. Gather the flock. Gather as many as you can into the flock. Let's do this nativity experience. Let's get out there and gather as many people as we can because the king is coming back. The shepherd is coming to gather his flock. And let's get ready for it. Let's get ready. But it's more than just gathering people in. I think there is something for our devotional lives in here. Get yourselves ready. Prepare yourself. Prepare the wilderness of your life. Every barrier, every mountain that stands in the way of you preparing for the shepherd, of you meeting with the shepherd now, make it low. Every valley that gets in the way of you meeting with your shepherd now, raise it up. Every rough place, make it smooth. Spend time with your shepherd, because only then are you going to continue to recognize his voice. Prepare yourselves to meet with the shepherd. I think that's one of the things I just neglect to do so often, especially when coming to this place, is to prepare myself. To prepare the way for God to actually do something in me every Sunday. Prepare the way. So we've looked at, you know, we've got who are we? We are the wayward sheep. He is the comforting shepherd. But here, as we carry on, Isaiah, I think, takes up that command from verse 1. The command that says, comfort my people. He goes, okay, I'm going to do it. And from the rest, he begins to describe who God is, and in doing so, comfort his people. He thinks, what can I do to comfort these guys in exile? What can I do to comfort you in a world that seems like everything's a mess? What can I do to comfort you? And then he says, I'm going to tell you who your shepherd is. He is the incomparable one. He is incredible. You know, thank you to Anne who read it so brilliantly. But it's all in there. He is the one, in verse 12, who measured the waters in the hollow of his hands, and the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens. Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? This is your God. Have you not heard? Do you not know? Has it not been told to you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits above the circle of the earth. Its people are like grasshoppers to him. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy, and he spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither. And a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and his arm rules with him. See, his reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him, and he gathers his flock like a shepherd. This incomparable, crazy creator, incredible in power, who stretches his arm and the heavens move, who casts out the stars and not one of them is missing, that same arm gathers us in as our shepherd. Why fear? Why worry? For this is our shepherd. There they are. And it says later on, why Jacob? And he's talking to the remnant. Why do you say, where is our God? And to them it must have seemed, has our God been defeated? Here we are stuck in exile. Has our God been defeated? And let's face it, when we look at our world, it's easy to ask that question. When you see ISIS, when you see the mess they make in America with their gun laws and all the sorts of things in the news constantly, it gets easy to say, where are you, God? Have you been defeated? But the answer is no. No, this is our incomparable God. He is so much stronger and he is still our shepherd. It's amazing. He is our shepherd. And just as a sheep might look out at the world and be like, I don't know what the shepherd's doing. So we might sit here and go, oh, you know what? I don't know what he's doing, but I can trust that he's doing it right. Because he is the shepherd. And we can draw comfort from his words, but we can draw comfort from his nature. When he says, you are mine, and he says, your sin is paid for, when he says, it is finished, then we can take that as truth because he is the incomparable. Because he is our shepherd. So who are we? He is the incomparable one. He is the comforting shepherd. We are the wayward sheep. But who can we be? We can be the comforted sheep. But we have to hear the voice of the shepherd. And I think actually hearing the voice of the shepherd, hearing the voice of the comforting shepherd, I reckon we hear it quite a bit, but I reckon we don't believe it. I reckon if you're anything like me, when you screw up, when you do something wrong, and perhaps it's something you've done wrong 100 times before, you'll ask for forgiveness, you'll come before God and you'll say, I'm so sorry. And then, you know, that's amazing in a sense, because it's the case of the Spirit writing the word on our hearts, helping us to see when we've done wrong. But then we take it to God and we hold on to it. We think, hang on, we hear the voice of judgment from God. We hear that voice of, you've done something wrong. And then when he starts to speak comfort, we think, that can't possibly be right. That can't possibly be for me, because God must be angry at me. But no, we understand, I think, God as our judge, but we don't get him as our shepherd. That voice of comfort, we need to hear it and believe it. And we need to be not only the comforted sheep, but the comforting sheep. We need to comfort each other. That first verse, we're going to go right back there. Comfort my people, says your God. This is the command to you and to me. Comfort each other. Not with a false comfort. Not with, oh, I don't know your situation, but it'll be fine. Comfort each other with true comfort. Share with each other the real problems that you're facing, the real struggles that you have, even if it means confessing some of the darkest things you've done to somebody, do it. Do it, because in doing so, we then get the opportunity to hear the voice of our shepherd, not just in our own heads, but from each other. The voice of our comforting shepherd who says, you are mine. Your sin has been paid for. It is finished. Let's just pray. Oh, Father, thank you that you don't leave us as we are, that you don't leave us mired in our sin, struggling, that you are the shepherd who comes to find us. You are the shepherd who speaks comfort, who even in the midst of our darkest times will never let us go. We thank you that you are the incomparable one, and that we need not fear anything, because you are both almighty and our loving shepherd. Father, help us to be less like wayward sheep and to hear your comforting voice, and to be able to share that comforting voice with each other and with this world.